Hello and welcome to the Lead Hership Show. I am your host, Harriet Schumacher, certified executive coach and women's leadership expert. Thank you for tuning in. Each week, we bring forward-thinking, inspiring, and real conversations for women who want to lead and live more fully. I'm so excited to have you here. I hope you enjoy the next conversation. Thanks for tuning in.
Okay, I am so honored and thrilled and nervous a little bit, honestly, because I have Rana Detrick here today. And Rana, I hold her in a special place in my heart because she has been in my life professionally, I don't know how many years, a few years, and has always stood out as a champion of women, someone who intuitively supports women. And in my professional experience of working with her, just you really always stood out to me as somebody who just saw me in a way that other people did not. So I really value that our paths have crossed, and you have so much wisdom to share. And I'm just really excited to be able to have this conversation today and be able to let other women see you in the way that I do and get to experience you. So thank you for volunteering to spend your time with us today, Rana.
I appreciate that, Harriet. I could say all of those things about you. So thank you.
You are a mom, you are a coach, you are a executive, you are an entrepreneur amongst, I'm sure, many other things that I am not accurately naming here. So tell us about you. Give us a bit of your background and, you know, your bio. What's on your rap sheet, Rana? Let's hear it.
You know, when people ask me this question, I immediately think of my oldest daughter who graduated from college a few years ago and is, you know, navigating this space of trying to figure out what she wants to do, what job she should hold. And I have all these opinions about how I think she could use her degree, what I think she could move toward. And then I'm reminded of my own history, and that humbles me and gives me the capacity to just let her experience this for herself, because my pathing has been very non-traditional, pretty erratic. I've done lots of different things, from fast food restaurant management when I first got out of college, which was very short-lived because I didn't like it at all, to working in retail. Eventually I landed myself in a human resources environment where I was doing placement of temporary employees and then full-time employees, which I actually really loved. And that was a really solid base of experience and skills that I was able to pick up that I then parlayed and used in a number of different environments. I lived internationally for a period of time. I did a ton of volunteer work while I was married, which is another story in and of itself. And then went back into HR after having traveled and lived overseas, and did that until I had kids. And so I got to stay home as a mom, full-time mom, for the first probably 4 or 5 years of their combined lives, which was such a gift. And then I went and got my master's degree. And after that, went to work at the grad school as the director of conferences. So it stepped me into this world of event management, event creation, learning creation. And then I lost that job and started my own business. So I did that for, gosh, almost 10 years before I stepped back into a corporate environment. And that's where you and I met. I was working for a global leadership development company and was a facilitator for them for the first year, and then was promoted to the senior vice president of learning with that organization, and was with them up until just a couple of months ago. And now I'm back in my own business. So when I tell it under 2 minutes, it's a bit of a whirlwind. It's decades of time that mm-hmm. have filled that story. But when I look back at it, you know, there have been moments where I've wished that I had taken a more traditional path or landed in something that I could have stuck with for a longer period of time. And simultaneously, what I'm aware of is that it has really been, it has been a journey that has continued to invite me into spaces that I would have never imagined, into roles that I could have never expected. And along the way, developing skills, growing myself as a human, meeting amazing people. So for all of the erraticness of it, I'm really grateful to be sitting here today and to have that, have those experiences behind me.
So within that journey that you have been traveling, what has been the thread that has been woven through your experiences that leads you to where you are positioning yourself as a woman, as a female leader right now?
Yeah, this is always the case. We can't really see it until we look back, right? Mm-hmm. And I think when I look back at all of these varied experiences, one thread that runs through them is really about me, not about the employers or the places that I worked. But it has been this push-pull of really being myself or not, really speaking up or not, choosing to use my voice or letting myself be silenced, compromising myself and what I knew I had to offer, or actually offering it. And in total transparency, more times than not, Harriet, I have not stepped up, not used my voice, not said the things that I knew I needed to say, not acted or led in ways that were as strong as they could have been. Now, acknowledging that I'm old, like I turned 60 last week, so I have—
That's a statement.
Yeah, my career has been lived in a time in which really women haven't been in leadership, where the roles that I held were, though I may have had a management position, I did not have the same power as the men who were in management positions. And I also grew up in a culture and a world that was dominated by an understanding that women were to be subservient and obedient and respectful and silent. So all those things put together, when I look back, is I see just so many places in which I learned to compromise, learned to comply, learned to hold my tongue, until of course I stopped doing all of that. So, you know, again, it's similar to what I just said. I wonder sometimes, had I not incorporated those lessons, or had I somehow figured out decades earlier how to break out of those cultural mandates, where would I be? And I don't regret where I am, but those are hard-earned lessons. So that's the thread, is really just looking back and recognizing just what an uphill climb it has been for me, and I know it is for so many women, to move into a place in their lives, whether that's in work or in relationships or their understanding of self, in which they're standing up and rising up and being all of who they are. And I can say that in first person. For me to stand up and rise up and be all of who I am has been a life's work, and certainly has not ended. There's much more to do.
So you've talked about expectations around women in the past, and how are things the same? How are things different today?
Well, I think a lot of things are different, but for as many things as are different, everything is still the same. It's as though we bring in, we see change, we bring in new elements, we see growth, but all the old stuff seems to stay with us as opposed to it vacating as something new comes in. And I think that's the painful part. Lots has changed, of course. Women are in leadership at much higher numbers than they were before. Our earning is still not at the same level as men, but it gets way closer than it was 20 years ago, to be sure. We now have a female vice president in the United States. This is forward movement. There is lots of movement, no question. I think the thing that continues to shock me is that for all that, and I'll speak for myself, I still find myself in places in which, as a woman, and I don't know that that's it's unique to me because I'm a woman, I don't feel as though, or don't find that I have the same capacity is not the right word, space or permission or invitation to step up in the ways that men might. Now, again, I think all of us have to, I have to take responsibility for that. Like, what part of that is me? Where am I afraid? Where have I been burned in the past? And that continues to impact the present. I don't get to blame all of this on men or culture by any stretch of the imagination. And the systems are still in place that influence and impact us as women on a day-to-day basis. And I just think we have to be so conscious and so awake and so alert to what's going on in order to get that to change, in order to step over the top of that and be who we really want to be and lead in the ways that we know that we can. It's exhausting. It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. It is a lot of work to be that awake and that aware and that conscious and that active. And then, so that's step one. It's like knowing that the issue exists.
Exactly.
Then the internal work that is required in order to be able to push against that so that the issue evolves and changes. So what's the inner work? We've talked about voice, we've talked about power. I love that idea of stepping over something. Like, that was just, I love that. Like, the wall that we have put up in, internally in front of ourselves, and the walls that exist externally, and how we need to rise to be able to step over those. Talk to me about that, you talk about this on your website. You talk about the gap. So what's the gap that women are experiencing right now, and how do we start to close that gap?
Yeah. Well, I think for me, I'll speak to for myself first. Like, where this first started to show up for me, to your point, like, we have to acknowledge it. We have to be able to name it and even see that it's happening. Where I first began to notice this with some acuity was in my marriage, where I began to recognize that the conversation I was having internally, the internal dialogue, the thoughts in my head were not the same as the ones that were coming out of my mouth or the way that I was showing up. And that gap between the internal and the way I was experienced, or I was allowing myself to be experienced externally, became wider and wider. And the more that I could see that gap, the more excruciating it was. And so the naming of that for me personally was really painful, but it also was what spurred my anger, frankly, first kind of at myself and all of the circumstances and situations that had led to this reality. But once I could see it and name it, then I was able to say, okay, not acceptable, Rana. You you can't continue to hold one set of truths internally and then live a totally different way. Bridge the gap. You are going to, I'm talking to myself, you are going to have to start speaking and being in ways that are consistent with what's going on internally. So for me, and I talk about this when I'm coaching women or I've written about this, it's, I suppose that the acknowledgement of that could have enabled me to just leap dramatically into being completely 100% consistent with what I knew was true about my own beliefs internally. I did not have the capacity to do that. I took the most baby steps. The metaphor I use is just like I dipped my toe in the water, trying. Like I would just say today, just one time today, I have to actually say what I think. Only once, just one time today, I have to actually say the thing that I think instead of the thing that I think he wants to hear. And I would do that one time. And sometimes absolutely nothing would happen. The day would go on. Hell did not freeze over. Lightning did not strike me dead. And I thought, oh, maybe I could do this twice tomorrow. It literally was that slow. So that experience, now if I push that into my, into the work world, into my role as a leader, into both my own business and into my executive position, because I had that experience, which then of course was replicated, I could see it everywhere around me in other women and in many contexts for myself, that began to be how I closed the gap. Rana, are you going to say and do what you actually think and feel, or are you not? And if you're not, then why? And is that okay with you? And the more that time went on, the more my answer was, that is not okay with me. It's not okay with me at all. I, and you know this, Harriet, we had these conversations, like when I've gotten toward the end, not quite knowing I was yet at the end of a particular position or experience or opportunity, it was because that rubber hit the road where I'm like, I'm willing to risk now. I'm willing to say what I think no matter what happens, because I can't not. Because if I keep holding back, if I keep complying, if I keep saying only what I think is allowed, well, then I'm not really here. It's not really me that's leading. It's not really me who's showing up. It's just some facsimile that's acceptable. And that just isn't acceptable. So that's the gap that I have experienced for myself and that I see in other women. Like, we know that we're powerful. We know that we have wisdom. We know what the right answers are. We know what could bring about change in our families, in our relationships, in our jobs, in organizations, frankly, across the planet. But to actually step to those places, to speak to that, to name that, to take the hit when people don't like us being bold and assertive and truth tellers, well, that's the gap. And so in the gap, I think we need a lot of things as women. We need to be able to do the naming. We need to be able to see that it's there in the first place. But the second thing I think we need so desperately is the support of other women. Like, we have to have other women who can see that gap for us and with us, who can come alongside us, who can support us, who can mirror for us what the places in which we aren't standing tall or stepping over or rising up. We can't do this by ourselves. We really need the support. And not, and for me, I don't just need it. I long for it. It is my greatest joy to be companioned by, supported by, advocated by, and to offer all of that to other women. It's, there's nothing like it.
So the word that I've written down here as I've been listening to you is doubt. So the doubt that I think about that too. I mean, how many times have I sat here and said, okay, Harriet, here's the voice that's going on inside of my head, and, you know, stick it to the man, or, you know, say what it is that you really want to say, or, you know, rip the band-aid and rebel, you know, that fire lives inside of me. And I wrestle with that tension on a daily basis. Like, how much of that is too much, or what will happen if you do, or it'll make things worse. Like, you know, all of that doubtful, self-doubting talk. So how do we reconcile the doubt, and where does that doubt come from?
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh.
I know.
Well, it comes from, you know, it comes from our family of origin. It comes from our socioeconomic status. It comes from our race, from our religion, it comes from all of those stories, all of those narratives. And then it comes from the unique work cultures or dynamics that we find ourselves in. It comes, and I do think a lot of it comes, how should I say this? I think more of it is based in our past than in what's present and true and real right now. Mm-hmm. So when you say, stick it to the man, as example, or, you know, this fiery part of you that could just righteously rage about something, mm-hmm. I would say you're probably right about that. Mm-hmm. You're probably right to do that. Where does the doubt come from? The doubt comes because in the past, when you've done that, that's not gone very well. Mm-hmm. In the past, when you have said what you think, when you've stepped into righteous indignation around something, there's been a cost. Mm-hmm. And so I think when we're in the present, we have to first acknowledge that, ouch, this has been painful for me in the past. And somehow I've survived it. Mm-hmm. This has been painful for me in the past. And what did I learn? I hope that the lesson wasn't, I should stay silent. The lesson might have been, okay, maybe I could have nuanced that messaging. Okay, maybe I could have dripped that out over 3 days instead of 3 minutes. Not because I'm compromising or complying or holding back, but because I'm thinking strategically about what I'm trying to accomplish here. Okay. But if I stay in the doubt and the fear of what it might cost me, it's actually costing me even more. Because now I'm holding even more back. Now I'm feeling even more stifled and shut down, which, as we know, at some point in time is going to come out in some way, whether that's verbally, or I actually get sick, or I have some pattern of addiction that I lean toward because it's too hard to hold all this. Like, the cost is greater ultimately. So I think, I don't know if I'm answering the question, the doubts mm-hmm. come from previous experiences, from stories that we've heard and stories that we've lived. And now we have to ask ourselves, am I willing to take the risk to have a different story, to have this be told a different way, to step into this anyway, because I want a different outcome. I'm never going to see the different outcome if I don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, risk is a big piece of it. I think that so many of us are looking for, how can I be powerful? How can I truly lead? And how can I do all of these things that we're talking about with as little risk as possible? If you can give me that approach, then I might be willing to try. And I understand that, but it doesn't seem like it doesn't seem possible to me.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot the last few weeks for who knows why, but I've been thinking about this idea of risk. And when I look back at my life, choices that I've made, hard things that I've struggled through, whatever, whether it's personally or professionally, I think one of the common denominators in there has been risk, either risk taken or risk averted. Mm-hmm. And if I were to create a rubric or a spreadsheet and list out the places where I averted risk compared to the places where I've taken it, I know exactly what I would see. I know exactly what would show up on that list. And so the thing I'm actually thinking about on behalf of women, it isn't how do we avert risk, it's how do we learn to take it? That's what we need. We need the support and the skill set, the muscle, the capacity to take risk with courage. And to know that when we do that, even if the whole thing falls flat, that it was still the right thing to do and that we are still supported and advocated for and held in the midst of something that feels really scary.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the challenge with risk for me is always the assumption that the risk is going to lead to a bad outcome. And that's just where the doubt is connected. Why we don't take risk is because we're assuming that, you know, it's going to lead to a negative outcome. And that's not necessarily like the risk could actually give a reward.
Exactly. And I think that
away the negativity. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. And I think, again, this is what we see when we look, at least for me, when I look back, some of the things that were the most disastrous or excruciating in the moment, I don't look at them that way now. They were the very things that compelled the kind of change and transformation that moved me to the next place. So yeah, the thing that you think is the absolute worst could very well happen. And it will be the very thing that will usher you into what's next.
Yeah,
that's always been the case. I mean, I just think that's, it's like the hero's journey or the heroine's journey. It doesn't matter what story we look at, what movie we watch, what show we're binging on Netflix, like that is the narrative arc. There is something dramatic that occurs that in the moment feels way too dangerous, way too risky, way too costly, and often is, but it's also the pivot point that moves the story forward. You know, I think this is one of the, I mean, we haven't talked about this, but of course I work with all these old, old ancient stories of women. And this is one of the reasons I think we as women have missed out on a legacy of stories that have modeled for us what happens when we find ourselves at these pivot points, when we find ourselves at great risk. We do not have a ton of stories like that. We have a lot of men's stories that we can look at. Again, Joseph Campbell, the hero's journey, they're all men. And so where does the doubt come from? Well, in some ways it comes from an absence of stories that show us what it looks like to take these kinds of risks and somehow survive. To take these kinds of risks and know incredible loss and pain and still survive, move forward, grow, rise up yet again. And I think women are particularly uniquely, profoundly positioned for this because it's what women always do. Women always persevere, always hang on, always go back for more, always. I mean, I just think it's in our nature. And sometimes that becomes martyr-ish and pain, you know, dysfunctional. But wow, the capacity that women have to endure, to rise up again, to persevere. I just think it's in our DNA. And if we could do it consistently and boldly and creatively and ongoing, our worlds and the world would be a different place.
And to not lose ourselves in the process of doing that because we're doing it for some other reason, like we're doing it to comply or we're doing it to control, like to perfect, you know, we're doing it because it's our story. So tell me, I know that that's a big part of your work, Rana, is helping women to reclaim and to rewrite, if you will, and fully own and step into their story, which is, I've been thinking about you a lot because the story that I have told myself about my life and what I've been through and I'm trying not to get emotional, but I'm like brushing my teeth and thinking of you and thinking what a disservice I have done to myself by how I've spoken to myself about, you know, what I've experienced in my life. And just like, why am I doing that? I don't need to do that. Like, there's a reason why these things happened, and trying to heal that, you know, part of me by rewriting that story. So share with me why this, you know, share with me about this work, what you do, how you help women, because I believe every single one of us has a story to tell. We don't tell it from a place of, you know, honesty and bravery. We tend to tell it from a place of, you know, lack.
Yeah.
Or something else. Yeah. So talk to me about that. Yeah.
I think one of the reasons that we don't tell our stories in the most brave or glorious of ways, again, is because historically the stories of women have not been told in those ways. The stories of women have been told in ways that have shamed and silenced them.
Yes.
And I work with a particular body of stories that have been shamed and silenced probably more than any others. But we incorporate that at a cellular level. So I think that's part of my work in taking these old stories that have been shamed and silenced is to, I completely reimagine them. I retell them through the lens that I think the women would want them told, not the way that the men, the patriarchy, has told these stories over time, but how would the woman tell her own story? How would she describe the events? What would her voice be if we had ever been given opportunity to hear it? So that's what I create and reimagine. But I'm not unclear about why I do that. I do that because that's my work for myself as well. It's the work that I long to offer to women themselves. Like, if we can look back at these old stories and see the ways in which they've been diminished, silenced, shamed, that's the naming of the past. We then can begin to see how we have just eaten right off that plate. We have followed in their footsteps because those are the only stories that we've known. But if we can rewrite the old ones and begin to understand ourselves and our legacy and our lineage in a much different way, then we can start to rewrite our own. And I think the two go hand in hand, which is why I spend so much time on these ancient stories, because I want us to have a model for how we now reimagine and redeem our own stories. So the first step here is the naming. Like, when you're brushing your teeth and thinking about your story, that's a naming, right? It's naming the gap. It's naming how the story has been told without shaming yourself, right? It's just acknowledging, oh, these are the circumstances. Oh, these are the cultural motifs or themes or realities that would have caused me to believe this, to act this way, to make this choice. We then can go to the second step after we've named, which I call imagining. Mm-hmm. And this is what I do with the stories. Once I've named the places in which they've known pain or silence or shame, now I can reimagine the story in a totally different way. I can just make shit up any way I want. And in some ways, that's what we need to be able to do for ourselves. We have to imagine our story in a different way. Now that I've got the two, I've got the old story or the common telling named, and I've got the imagined telling in front of me, the third step is that I have to choose, or I get to choose. Now I have two different ways, and there's probably a myriad. There is a myriad, but I'm only talking about the two in really blocked categories. Now I have to choose. Now I have to fill the gap. Now I have to bridge this. This is the naming. This is the old story that I've been living. These are the old stories that I've been hearing that have been influencing me. Here's what it could be, should be, could possibly look like. Which one am I going to choose? And then I get to write it. I get to be the protagonist of my own story. I think this is, if we had more time, I would certainly talk about this. I think this is where we get really stuck. We feel as though we're not writing our own stories, that circumstances, events, the patriarchy, our culture, our boss, our job, our significant other, our kids, our money, like, that's what's writing my story. I can't write my own story. All this stuff's controlling it. And I just don't agree with that. And I understand why it happens. I'm living evidence of that being the way in which my story's been written until I look at it and go, no, the damn pen is mine.
Yeah.
You do not get to decide this for me. And so, you know, we started this kind of talking about leadership, but I think this is what leadership has to look like for women. It's personal work. It's not about the job that you give me, the years of experience that I have. I mean, it is about all of that. But in order for women to lead in places of full integrity and incredible strength, we have to do so much inner work to trust that we deserve to be there, to pick up the pen and write the story ourselves, to choose how we're going to do this. It's exhausting and it's so empowering when we can do it and when we're supported in that work.
I love that. I was thinking here, you know, I have definitely sat, and I know many other women have. I can only speak from my own experience, though, with any, you know, full transparency, is sitting back and thinking, well, I didn't author my own story. It was authored by the people who came in and out of my life. And this is the cards that I've been dealt. And here's what I've been left with, right? Very much can feel a victim of circumstance and can feel shame about that. And this was not my fault. And this was not my control. But I also recognize from what you just said is, what if amongst all of that, I was actually writing the story myself? And so I think for me, the piece of awakening here has been, I was writing it all along. And to be more conscious, to be more awake of what do I want the next, you know, chapter book to be? And am I sure that the story that I'm telling myself, the narrative that I'm telling myself, is written with my own words? You know, that's something that I really need to spend some time exploring.
And sometimes, oftentimes, Harriet, I think I don't want to gloss over or paint a different picture of harm that has been done to us. Like,
for
that's
sure.
part of the naming.
Yeah.
We must name places in which we've been victimized legitimately. We must name the players, the people, the stories, the past that has harmed us. I do not in any way mean to say that that's all been on me. Absolutely not. We have very hard things that have happened in our stories that were not our fault, that were all completely about the other person and massive harm and pain. And it is so important that we're able to name that and grieve that and rage about that, and simultaneously say, you don't get to write this anymore.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
It is. And
but beautiful work.
Beautiful work. And what I will say back to you is, here's what I know without a shadow of a doubt. You are wise and powerful, Rana. So I want to say thank you for being here for this short period in time. It sounds like another conversation is looming for us at some point in the future. So how can, I know I've personally experienced one of your readings and have been recommending that to women and have shared your readings with some friends of mine. So talk with me about how women can find you, how women can work with you. Give us some insight into that for women who want to reach out to you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, the easiest thing to do is to just go to my website, ranadietrich.com, and you will see everything there. The readings hold just such a special place in my heart. This is where I take these ancient stories and reimagine them in powerful voiced ways. And then I choose one of those uniquely for you if you purchase a reading. And my belief is that whoever shows up, I have a deck of cards of all these stories that I've worked with over almost 20 years. And I just really believe and trust that the story that shows up and the wisdom that this woman uniquely has to offer will speak profoundly into your life. And even today, as we've been speaking, Harriet, I'm thinking more about the one that you got, the reading that was yours, because she shows up.
in what we're talking about here today. So I would love to be able to introduce people to these women's stories and more importantly, their own through this experience of readings that I have available right now. And of course I do coaching and have another number of other things that are available to people and would love for folks to find me and take advantage of all that. Yeah, I can't recommend you enough. And the readings are profound. The women who I have shared those with, who you have done those readings for, as I mentioned to you before, said that in the midst of a year, which really has been a shit year for a lot of us, lots of different ways, and has been challenging and hard and tough, and also on the other side of things, you know, we've learned a lot through this, but have felt loved through those readings. Mm-hmm. And I think what you have said is very important, is that we are not alone, and you are an example and a gift of, you know, wisdom and support and advocacy for women who might be feeling alone right now. And I think that those stories can help us connect to something much greater and much more powerful than the doubt that exists within inside of each of us on a daily basis. So thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you, Harriet. My privilege and pleasure.
Okay. Take care, Rana. We'll share all of your links and everything in the recording so that everyone can find a way to reach out to you directly. And I hope that you'll come back and talk with us again.
Anytime.
Okay. Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello again. This is Harriet Schumacher, and thank you for listening and tuning into The Leadership Show. I really hope that you enjoyed what we were discussing today. And if you did, if you liked what you heard and you want to continue to be a part of our community, here's a couple of ways that you can do that. First, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You want to make sure that you get our releases coming to you each week. And if you would love to give us a rating and give us some feedback about the show, of course, we would love to hear your thoughts. And on another note, if you want to be a part of our community, we have a private Facebook group for women in leadership. It is actually called the Women in Leadership Group. You can find us on Facebook. We have over 1,300 professional women who are inside that community who are having amazing conversations right now about what they care the most about. I go live inside that group every Tuesday to give you free training and free coaching. So we hope that you join. We'd love to see you over there. So thanks so much, everyone. Enjoy your day, and we look forward to hearing you and being with you again next week. Take care.